Good evening. Welcome to the Salera Report. Today is Thursday, July 12th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Hold that date, September 22nd, Asheville. We have lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore at the Biltmore Estate, Asheville, North Carolina. If you log in, you'll just see the lunch with Catherine. You can click and get tickets. It's going to be an amazing group that comes. I'm hoping Greg Hunter says he's coming. We're going to have dinner with him the night before, but he says he'll come over and stop in at the Biltmore as well. I'm in Bucharest. I just came from 1 week in Sofia with Thomas Meyer and a group of his subscribers and members at the Present Age. It was simply marvelous. We were there to attend Das Ring, put on by the Sofia Opera. I have to say, Vienna plus 5 days in Vienna plus a week in Sofia, it's a much more human environment. People are out talking with each other. You see many less smartphones. You know, if people have them, they're in their bags or pockets. They're not out. They're not walking around in a technology trance. And the money fever is much less. Anyway, I came away with a new word that Thomas came up with. I had sent him a video that was truly astonishing of a brain scientist speaking at Lawrence Livermore Laboratories about weaponizing neuroscience, neuroweapons. It's frightening. Thomas looked at it and said, oh, he's a hypermaterialist. In other words, he's a person who thinks the whole world is spirit is material and doesn't really is oblivious to the fact that a spiritual and energetic world exists. So that's my new word, hypermaterialist and hypermaterialism. And it defined for me what I was finding so frustrating in the U.S. because it seems like the hypermaterialism is getting worse and worse and worse. Thomas and I recorded a discussion that we had in Sofia about Wagner's Das Ring series and what it teaches us about the challenges of managing power in this world and various other things that we were talking about. It's always a rich discussion, and I'll see him again when I'm in Switzerland. As I said, I'm now in Bucharest for 5 days in Romania, and I've met up with Jason Bowden-Smith, who's here on business from Australia, and I came at the invitation of some very special Salera Report subscribers. I'll be spending the weekend sightseeing with them and Jason in the country, and I can't wait. Romania's a very fascinating and interesting place. After I leave on Monday, I'm headed for 2 weeks to the Netherlands, to Friesland, and then I'll be in Switzerland for 5 days, mostly in Zurich, with a side trip to Basel to see Thomas, and then up to Lake Constance, and then across to Chartres in Paris with Ulrich. We'll be looking at the great cathedrals. I've been reading about them. And then I'll head up to Brittany and spend 2 days with Alistair Thompson, the former editor of Scoop Media in New Zealand, and then down to southern France and Toulouse, and then back up to the Netherlands for a week, then over to Scotland for a week, and back to the States on September 9th. So if we crisscross and you're interested in getting together, let me know. I'll be back in Europe for the conference in Italy in October 19th to 21st, Scientists for Peace. And that's part of the future science effort with Ulrich. I'll be attending with her. A couple just reminders on the website. Remember, there's a What's New section that you'll see after you log in. So if you just want to click on one thing to see everything that's the newest that's been posted, you can do that. We're also now making a separate money and markets commentary. There are, if you have a full screen, you'll see it on the right. If you've got a mobile screen, it'll be all the way at the bottom. We're collecting the stories during the week, so it's a great place to post your questions if you want. And of course, we post the charts. You can also, instead of just clicking on the commentary, you can also access it from the navigation bar by clicking on Money and Markets there underneath the Salera Report, or we'll have a link in the weekly interview commentary. And also, if you click on the little microphone, the table at the top that comes out, you can also access Money and Markets there. So that's 4 access points to get you there. And if none of those work, you can always go over to my Twitter feed, and I always tweet out the link, both, you know, when I first post it and then after we post the audio. Our theme tonight is prioritization fever. In fact, the equity overview this quarter is focused on helping you connect the dots between the what I see as being real prioritization fever developing in the Trump administration and in Washington, and what's happening in the equity markets. There are many who believe the equity markets are the bull market is almost over, and or we're in for a serious correction. That may or may not be true. The reality is, I think a lot of market commentators are underestimating the potential for additional rounds of steroids that could come in, both with the missing money and prioritization. And it's a real concern because I think I've only seen this kind of fever once before, and that's when in the process of globalization, we busted through the internal financial controls in the federal government, and the money started to go missing in the mid-1990s, combined with the housing bubble. The Clinton impeachment madness was part of that process, and I've long believed that money going missing from HUD was what originally financed the Clinton Foundation, the Epstein, Jeffrey Epstein operations, and the Tony Blair Foundation. I just did some tweets on the Waraker trilogy. And though it sounds like an unusual combination, if you watch the Waraker trilogy and read my review of the Waraker trilogy, you'll know a little bit more about why I say that. The kind of fever that we're seeing, the prioritization fever, is a form of hypermaterialism. It's really a form of madness because it's a society liquidating itself and liquidating many people, many communities, much family wealth. The question I keep thinking about is there a way to shift this to something less wasteful, less destructive, more productive? Is it still possible for the Titanic Turners to control instead of just having another pig fest? If you don't know the reference to Titanic Turners, it's from my review of the Trump administration coming in the clash of civilization. I divided the cabinet into four types. One is Titanic Turners, another is piggies, and then a third is scorpions, and then the fourth is scaredy cats. And I kind of reviewed all the incoming cabinet members as one of the four. And the problem was, if the Titanic Turners get too frustrated, they can end up going along with or turning into pigs. The pension funds really can't afford another pig fest. If you look at what happened on both the missing money and the bailouts, they've been quite drained by those two processes. And they certainly didn't make it up on globalization. So the question for me that I'm thinking a lot about these days is, if I was a wise counsel of pension fund elders, what would I do? How would I turn this in a more positive direction? So that's an important topic, something I'm going to be thinking and talking about more in the third quarter. Money in markets, the U.S. dollar index, as Rambo said, and I talk more about it in my discussion of his excellent blockbuster chartology for the second quarter. U.S. dollar still in a long-term bull market. It's up 2.9% for the year. Fixed income still reflecting the rise in rates, but not off by that much. It's improved a bit. The long treasury ETF off down 2.23% for the year. Intermediate down 1.89%. The bond aggregate down 1.47%, and junk almost flat down 42 basis points. Rambis points out in his latest discussion after he wrote the blockbuster chartologies, he's got a new piece on the bond market, and he points out that there are deflationary pressures, and so not to bet the ranch on explosive interest rate rises. I agree with him completely. I think they're unlikely. Equities, another thing he says is he puts up a chart of the industrials, the latest chart of the industrials, and says it's the most hated bull market in the world, but it continues. I agree. The U.S. market continues to overperform, and we've had a decade or more of steroids to make sure that that's so. As I said, don't bet the ranch on a major consolidation or the end of the bull market, because there are unfortunately, plenty of new sources of steroids. It's why I'm worried so much about quote-unquote prioritization. S&P now up 4.63% for the year. Home builders lagging down 8.42%. Europe obviously lagging the U.S. The VGK ETF down 2.23%. Germany down 6%. The developed markets minus North America down 2.7%. China, which was flying, down 7.46%. The small caps in China, that 7.46% is a large cap. Small caps down 3.41%. And emerging markets down 7.65%. If this continues, you know, the real question is there a real opportunity to start buying long-term growth opportunities in the emerging markets in China? Or could a U.S. dollar bear trap really hammer them some more? And I don't think we're out of the woods yet. Commodities almost flat. They're down 53 basis points for the year. They were doing much better. Gold down 4.86%, silver down 7.07%, and energy flying up 16.36%. So oil has done the best so far. Why was the 2000 election so hard fought? One reason was who was going to get to determine the real tenor and direction of the Supreme Court for a whole nother generation. The president has nominated his Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. Turns out Kavanaugh worked for Starr investigating the Vince Foster death. I find it very charming, the idea that we would have someone on the Supreme Court who understands the real deal on the Clintons, because if they understand the real deal on the Clintons and Vince Foster, they understand the real deal on the Bushes as well. Kavanaugh's financial filings show he has no debt on his house and no money or almost no money in the securities markets. And you sort of wonder if learning the real deal on the Clintons and the Bushes destroyed his faith in the financial system. If so, he's certainly not alone. I doubt the Democrats are going to be able to stop his appointment unless they can stall until after the election and do much better in the election than I expect they will do. So I don't see that happening. So I give Kavanaugh a high chance of successful appointment if he just holds his temper and doesn't mishandle the mud that's bound to fly. Meetings. We are in the middle of some very important meetings. We just finished with the NATO meeting in Brussels. Trump was the crazy maker, although I don't think his goals were crazy. He started by proposing that instead of the 2% spending target that every NATO member should have, they ought to double it to 4%. I'm sure that caused everybody to go into shock. And then he demanded that the 2% military target that was is supposed to be met by 2024 be met immediately. And the NATO Secretary General ordered an emergency session on the last day. Instead of doing what they're supposed to do, they went into emergency session. When it all came out, they agreed, and Trump agreed to a 2% military spending target for 2024. But you could see there was a lot of cage rattling going on and saber rattling going on. And I would love to have been in the room to kind of watch that. But clearly the adaptation to a multipolar world continues. Trump was headed after the meeting to the UK to spend time with May, who certainly has her hands full. The cabinet, UK cabinet, approved a soft Brexit. Then the lead negotiator quit, said he couldn't implement it. And then Boris Johnson resigned, the foreign minister. The government is holding. It turns out that May's strong suit is the threat that if the government comes apart, the Conservatives will turn things over to Jeremy Corbyn, and that's probably a real fear. Trump goes to Helsinki for a meeting with Putin on Monday. The anti-Russian forces are out in full blossom, but if it proves anything, it proves that the Democratic ploy to blame the Russians for their loss of the election has really bombed. And more about the swamp drama in a second. Final meeting, the Bohemian Grove is meeting the white out on the Bohemian Grove. There's a little post at Solaria that explains the Grove meeting, which I put up once a year when this happens. The whiteout on the Grove meeting, I've never seen anything. There is nothing in the press about the fact that the Bohemian Grove is meeting. Interestingly enough, a Google search this evening picked up a piece from the Santa Rosa Press Democrat that was published 7 hours ago when I did the search approximately 2 hours ago. And it starts off, it has the same picture I have up of a old sort of ancient picture. And it says historic photos show secretive clubs early days. And then the first line, for more than 130 years, the male-only Bohemian Club has beguiled and bewildered the public with its annual summer gatherings. When you click on the story, it dead ends. The story is already gone in 7 hours. That is quite a whiteout. And there's nothing else posted. As far as I know, Solari appears to be the only post I can find. Here's why. I think I've talked a lot about the fact that I think the Santa Rosa fires were simply clearing a couple 100,000 acres to make way for a Silicon Valley North. And I think if anything, those kinds of decisions are made at the Grove. One of the things I talk about in the equity overview tonight is the extent to which I don't think supply constraints are going to be a problem. Mark, you're hearing market commentators say the problem is with the capital repatriation and the tax reform. The stock market and corporations are going to bump into all kinds of supply constraints. If you look at what happened in Santa Rosa, if you look at the kind of sort of high IQ immigrants, high educated immigrants that are taking place, I think, very quietly, I don't think supply constraints are going to be a problem because the leadership is not going to stand around bumping into supply constraints when simply taking action and ignoring the law with impunity is going to work. So whether it's clearing 700,000 acres or swinging a lot of the right kind of engineers from around the globe, I think they're going to do whatever they need to do to make their targets. And that's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about the extent of what could happen on the quote-unquote prioritization. So these meetings require complete whiteout if you're talking about the kinds of plans that I think are going on. One person called me who'd come through the Denver airport last week and said that up on one of the ads, there was a mention that 60 to 70 million Americans were going to move to cities in the next 10 years. Well, if you look at the total population, there are 60 to 70 million people not currently living in urban areas. So unless we move 100% of the population to urban areas, we're going to have quite some immigration. It's a very interesting. I'd love to know where they. I'd love to see the estimate behind those numbers. Anyway, if you are meeting with a large number of business, industry, and government leadership and discussing these kinds of radical engineerings, there is a reason you want complete whiteout. The liabilities of these discussions are enormous. So, and it's one of the reasons why I think the missing money is the anomaly that unravels the whole official story. The numbers just don't add up, and the law is so clear on that point, and it's the violation of the law is completely, utterly documented significantly with government documentation, which is public and available now. And it's no doubt why the disinformation tsunami on the missing money is not only enormous but growing. It's quite a crescendo, and I talk about it in the equity overview tonight. Who would have thought I would say this? Bravo to the Department of Justice. They have appealed the ruling allowing the AT&T Time Warner merger that Judge Richard Leon issued in the initial round of the litigation. And so they've appealed the judge's ruling and that would allow AT&T to acquire Time Warner. And this is a blockbuster antitrust case. What the chances of their appeal is, I don't know. But this may just simply be an election year decision. The stink coming from the AT&T relationship with the Republican continues to be, in my opinion, a serious election year liability. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the administration would want to do this, even if the chances were thin. Swamp drama, you just can't believe how nuts it's getting. We have FBI hearings. Peter Strzok testifying about his various texts, including with his colleague and fellow colleague and mistress, regarding the FU Trump. That, along with more reading of the Department of Justice IG report, sounds terrible, looks terrible. The FBI investigation of Clinton was a joke, and the whole establishment is basically permitting massive illegal behavior by the entire Clinton network. If you compare the treatment of the application of the law to Clinton versus all sorts of other people, in fact, we now have litigation suing the FBI about treatment of other people under federal statutes vis-a-vis the Clintons. I mean, it's so bad you don't even know what to say. It's ultimate proof of the failure of the Democratic ploy to blame the Russians, and you can't believe they're this sloppy. And it shows you how much they used to get away with without the a much smarter sort of independent media and much smarter citizenry following and the ease with which this information gets out. But the ultimate proof of the failure of the Democratic ploy is the fact that Putin and Trump are meeting this Monday. So I think once that meeting takes place, I think the Democrats are coming into the election tremendously weakened by the way they played all of this. Europe is still struggling with immigration. Wherever I go, whatever I do, I'm talking with everybody about it. Italy has closed its ports to the NGOs, and the EU has extended Russian sanctions. There's a lot going on here that I don't understand, but one of the things most Europeans believe is that there is an intentional effort to try and destroy Europe, to destroy its culture and try and weaken its institutions. I agree. And the question is, who's really doing this and why? They believe it's part of inspiring a organized one Europe, and that's part of getting to one world government. I wonder to what extent it's also protecting the U.S. dollar, the euro being one of the few currencies that can provide real liquidity away. While I was in Sofia, there was a 16+1 summit, China being the one meeting with 16 Eastern European countries. You just can't believe that the U.S. business and construction interests aren't on the Silk Road competing for any of the business. And you wonder why. What in the world is going on? Why is all this turf being conceded? Our hero this week is Clifford Carnicom. Clifford has been really the most distinguished leading researcher on global spraying for quite some time. He runs the Carnicom Institute out of Santa Fe, New Mexico. We've done 3 Salieri Report interviews with Clifford. The second was a 2-hour special that really is the best introduction to chemtrails I have ever seen, or Clifford would say global spraying, that I've ever seen until Alana Freeland's book. And in fact, if you listen to that 2-hour special with Clifford, it's back in the library archives, and then read Alana's book, you will have the very best. And of course, watch this presentation. It was a new one that he just did. And it's one subscriber that I sent it to this afternoon started to listen, and he wrote back and he said, wow, this guy is such a hero. And it's true. He is. Let's go to the movies. And let's go to the movies. I wanted you to watch a relatively short documentary. It's very digestible, from the BBC, Why Beauty Matters. I often say beauty is necessary for survival. I think there's been a concerted effort, Dr. Farrell talks about it a lot, to really strip beauty from our lives. And the remarkable thing about beauty, if you see what's available in terms of art, music, and nature, it's so easy to fill your life with beauty. And it's an incredible source of personal joy and power. And it's one we can access whenever we choose. And again, it can be remarkably easy and inexpensive to build beauty into our daily life. And I can't tell you how important I think it is It's just a way of richly rewarding ourselves. And again, beauty is a source of personal joy and power. And the thing I like about this documentary is it really shows you the concerted effort to strip beauty. You see it when you come to a place like Sofia in Bucharest, the extraordinary beauty that was present and the real effort by the Soviet period and various dictators to destroy the beauty and strip it out. And it's pretty scary and pretty frightening. You think, what kind of demonic force could do that? But again, it's an opportunity. Look for every way you can reward yourself with beauty throughout your day-to-day existence. Our interview is Catherine talking about the equity overview for the second quarter wrap-up. And I go through the Rambus's analysis, wonderful blockbuster Chartology. We're so blessed to have Rambus's material each quarter, and also through the charts that we put up at the web presentation. I would encourage you to go to the web presentation and access both the Rambus analysis and blockbuster Chartology and the charts. And then I talk through what's happening politically with privatization and the various methods of delivering steroids into the stock market, and talk about why I'm so concerned about the privatization fever we're seeing come out of Washington. So I think it's more than just capital repatriation of corporate money in the tax reform. I think there's another amazing round coming. It's what Joseph and I talked about in the first quarter wrap-up, about the rape of Russia coming to the United States. And I continue to explore it, talk about it. I'm going to keep talking about it in the third quarter, because I think it's extremely important that each one of you be prepared to deal with it as it impacts your life. It's going to be very different depending on where you are and what kind of work you do. But it's that, and new technology is going to be like getting hit with one tsunami after another. And so I think it's important that we keep talking about it. Anyway, second quarter equity overview, very much related to the relationship between privatization fever and the outperformance of the U.S. equity markets. Ask Catherine. We have several people send in a lot of links. One on Major Jordan, who was a World War I and World War II veteran, about his experience during World War II with the Russians. Thank you for that. And then a lot of health videos related to Jack Cruise, and I've passed those on to Jason as requested. Some questions for Thomas about consciousness. And we got to some. So I think you'll find that interview interesting. And I will put it up. I hope to put it up next week as a special report. And then more questions about Joseph's praise of Margaret Thatcher and whether or not privatization and privatization in the UK made sense. So I have those links as well. Someone sent a link from Gaia TV on an interview done with Judy Woods that looked very interesting. I wanted to watch it, but couldn't because it wasn't accessible in Europe, only accessible through the U.S. So I appreciate that, because I think Judy Woods' work on 9/11 is interesting, especially if you read it in combination with Farrell's book on 9/11. Dear Catherine, something very disquieting came last week from Charles Schwab, with whom I have an account. We all believe that FDIC insurance is supposed to cover our accounts up to $250,000, right? Dated November 2016, a six-page printed certificate of deposit disclosure statement stating payments under adverse circumstances section, that if it becomes necessary for federal deposit insurance payments to be made, there is on my CD, there is no specific time period during which the FDIC must make insurance payments available. Accordingly, you must be prepared for the possibility of an indeterminate delay in obtaining insurance payment. It gets worse. It seems they have insufficient funds on hand. I had no idea this was the policy of FDIC. It seems FDIC cannot be depended on. And so the question is what to do. I'm curious in your view on this, advice for your readers. This is new news for me. I hadn't seen this yet. I'm going to do some research on this, and so I will try and answer this next week or the week following. It depends on what research I get. I've sent a couple of emails looking for more information. In my opinion, the feds would be fools to not fund FDIC insurance quickly and immediately. If you look at our ability to print paper, we can certainly do it. The only reason why you wouldn't want to do it is if you wanted to create a liquidity crisis that would bring major privatization off at cheaper prices. So it's the rape of Russia scenario. The question is somebody building up to that? And I think that's a serious question because I have concerns that the piggies may try and do it. So anyway, so let me do some more research and get back to you. But I think that is an extremely timely and important question, and I very much appreciate your sending it in. I could say that the alternative is to put it in Treasury bills, but in a case where the FDIC is not, you know, funding things on a timely basis, it's not clear to me that you'd want to be in Treasuries. And it's one of the reasons I think that high-quality corporates have been outperforming the Treasury market of late, and not just of late, for the last couple of years. Okay, that's it for this evening. Next week, July 19th, we have Good Manners with Daniel Posetting of the Emily Post Institute. Then the following week, second quarter wrap-up, The Rise of the Asian Consumers. Wow, did that turn out to be a fascinating and meaty topic. We have a lot to talk about. Then Saker, The Emerging Multipolar World. Saker's been busy if you've been checking out his website. A lot to say about the condition of the U.S. military, which is critical in terms of the future of the U.S. dollar and overperformance in the U.S. equity markets. And then Future Science, The Wave Genome with Ulrich Groniker. Fascinating topic. So until next week from Friesland in the Netherlands, where I'll be bringing money and markets to you, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.